This is an ABC podcast.
Resorts, homes and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia.
And I'm Josiah Nanunga, based in Fiji, and this is Pacific Prepared.
It's a show all about natural disasters, climate change, and traditional knowledge, and how things are all connected.
And you'll hear that through stories from right across the Pacific. Each week, we work with local reporters. They are on the ground,
letting us know what's happening in this space and what people want to hear about. On today's show, the International Court of Justice. They want to hear your stories, and we'll explain more about that soon.
Also, the weather in Fiji has been pretty unusual. I'll tell you more on that soon.
And when it comes to weather forecasts, Samoa is trying to make it easier. They're making some simple changes.
Well, that's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
The time to prepare is now, not right before an emergency.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
Joe, I just want to know if you've heard about this story about the International Court of Justice. What does that mean to you?
Fred, I know the International Court of Justice, the term itself, but what real the work that they do, I have no idea about it.
Yeah, well, they've been in the news a bit for the last probably 12 months or so.
Right.
And I don't know if you would have heard, but Vanuatu has been sort of leading the push to get what they're referring to as an advisory opinion.
Right.
Which sort of is probably legal speak.
Mm.
But basically, they're trying to get an advisory opinion or some advice from the International Court of Justice.
Right.
On what responsibilities countries have when it comes to climate change.
Right, right. And, you know, Vanuatu is one of the vulnerable countries in the Pacific, susceptible to climate change and rising sea levels. And, you know, it's good to hear. It's good to hear that about lobbying opinions and advice from the International Court of Justice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of countries involved with this too. It's not just like Vanuatu. They've sort of been leading
right.
it. But
from the Pacific.
Yes, yes. Lots of countries from the Pacific.
Nice.
And some from outside the Pacific too. Let's get a bit more of a legal explanation from somebody who's in that space. It's Cynthia Hunyuhi. She's from the Solomon Islands, and she's also the president of the Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change.
Okay, so basically, the resolution that was adopted on the 29th of March 2023 was the United Nations General Assembly agreeing as a body to request an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice. So for us, Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change, what we've been campaigning for since 2019 was to get an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice on the questions of climate change and in relation to human rights. That was the campaign. And the first phase was to get it through United Nations General Assembly. To get an advisory opinion, a state cannot directly seek an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice, which is the UN principal judicial organ. However, the International Court of Justice can give advisory opinion to its UN organs such as United Nations General Assembly, Security Council, on areas that are relevant to their bodies. The United Nations General Assembly has a more broader area that you can pursue a question or design a question under. And so that was the path we took in 2019 till the United Nations adopted the resolution in 2023. So now we're looking to the International Court of Justice, and we're in the process of encouraging states to make submissions to get an advisory opinion after all the proceedings has taken place. So basically, the advisory opinion that the International Court of Justice would give is not legally binding. However, it's highly persuasive based on the fact that this is the principal judicial organ of UN and the highest court in the world, as we'd like to say. And also, the process legitimizes the advisory opinion. And also because although it is not legally binding, the laws that the International Court of Justice will consult to answer the questions that we are bringing to the International Court of Justice, the laws are binding and are found in existing treaties. So this is not creating new laws, but however, we're bringing a question of what are the obligations of states and in terms of climate change, what are obligations of states and what are the consequences if these obligations are not looked after? So what it means for our people is that for a long time, our people have done their best to cope with these adverse effects of climate change, and we bear the brunt of it, although we contribute almost nothing to it. And so what it means for our people is a more ambitious climate action that is reflective of the urgency that our people on the ground are facing, because for a long time we're going towards solution at a slower pace, not reflective of the fast pace that the adverse effects of climate change is affecting our people. So it means more ambitious, it creates incentive for more ambitious climate action, and also it can push through accountability as well, as we have seen now the trend of more people looking towards courts to hold the governments and other agents responsible for the catastrophe or their negligence in terms of contributing to this climate crisis that we are facing. So in terms of accountability and more ambitious climate action, that is what we hope for our people. And more specifically, in terms of intergenerational equity, we're not looking in terms of the rights of our young people now, but what about the children and the generations that are coming after? So for Pacific Islanders, a lot of cultures are at stake, and this would mean protecting that for our future generations as well, because we are people of the ocean, land, and we derive a lot of who we are from our surroundings. So, yeah.
That was Cynthia Hunyahi. She's from the Solomon Islands, and she's the president of the Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change. And just basically breaking down what the International Court of Justice wants people to do now, like what the process is from this point, I guess.
That was an interesting, piece or sentiments from Cynthia.
It is. So the next sort of stage from here, Joe, is basically, I think, waiting to see what this advice from the Court of Justice, the International Court of Justice, actually is.
So the outcome will basically be applied to Vanuatu and other Pacific islands. Is that right?
More or less, it is advice to use legally. So it's not binding as such, and I'm not a legal expert by any stretch, but that's my understanding.
So something like advice that will suit the context of the Pacific Island countries.
Yes, exactly. So this is Professor Margaret Young, and she's a professor in law at the University of Melbourne, and she can explain that a little bit more.
So I think it's important at the outset to note the difference between advisory opinions and judgments on contentious cases at the International Court. So judgments are binding on parties. They lead to specific orders, like we saw in the whaling case that Australia brought against Japan a few years ago. Advisory opinions, on the other hand, are requests from United Nations organs, like the General Assembly, for advice on legal questions. So they're supposed to guide those organs in how they respond to issues. So advisory opinions are not intended to be binding on states, but they give important guidance. Now, for climate change, there is still uncertainty about the content of state obligations despite the Paris Agreement and the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And that's because the Paris Agreement sets out a framework for states to undertake domestic action on climate change, which are called nationally determined contributions. But that doesn't really go into the issue of obligations, especially if some states are causing significant harm to the climate system and other states are highly vulnerable to those harms. So this advisory opinion won't be direct precedent. So as I said, it's not binding on states and other courts won't have to directly follow it. It's there to guide the UN organs. But we do know that advisory opinions can be highly influential. And it's true that international courts, regional courts, domestic courts, they're all paying attention to one another. And I can give a historical example of this, and that is an advisory opinion on the Western Sahara in 1975, so probably a long time before people are taking note of advisory opinions right now. In 1975, Australia didn't participate in that advisory opinion, but subsequently that opinion was cited by our High Court in the landmark Mabo decision of 1992, which found terra nullius to be a legal fiction in Australia, leading to, you know, massive changes to the law. So, you know, here we had an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice considering issues of terra nullius, which subsequently became useful for the Australian High Court.
So, Fred, that was very interesting, interesting insights from Professor Young. Where to from now? What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, not what I reckon, but what the ICJ reckons is they want your stories. They want people right. living in the Pacific who are actually experiencing climate change. They want to hear about what's happening on the ground, basically. And those submissions are due by the 22nd of March, 2024. So this year. Yep, this year. And then so in it's anticipated that the advisory opinion will come down in 2025. We're not sure exactly when, but in 2025, though. You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
What's your plan? Are you ready to leave your home? Plan now before disaster strikes. Pacific Prepared.
Joe, I understand that Fiji has had some maybe slightly unusual weather lately. Is that right?
Absolutely, Fred. Over the past few days, unusual weather patterns, you know, been experienced in Fiji, right across the country. Over the weekend, last weekend, from Saturday coming down to Sunday, Monday, early this week, heavy downpour. The warning was issued by the weather office based in Nandi, that, a tropical depression was approaching Fiji. And it weakened on Tuesday morning. But, it created a lot of havoc and, impacted the lives of Fijians who are residing or living in the northern part of Fiji. That's Bonolevu. Yeah. So, it was, worth noting that, the advice came in early and people prepared accordingly. So that's climate change. And, you know, last week, the Minister for Disaster Management in Fiji, Sakia Sinditoka, he officiated at a Pacific Region Disaster, Disaster Risk Finance Workshop at the, which was held at the University of the South Pacific here in Suva, Fiji. And, we'll hear, what are some of the key messages that he uttered when he opened the workshop.
I am indeed delighted to see the alliance of the international and regional agencies in organizing this very timely and much-needed regional workshop. Undoubtedly, natural disasters pose an existential threat to the Pacific Island countries. Resilience building and adaptation is imperative to deal with this front and center issue. It is critical to holistically assess the mosaic of solutions available and embed them in the national planning and budgetary processes. The spate of natural disasters, which regularly visit our region and island nations, has burdened our fiscal position, as we have to resort to borrowing for recovery and rehabilitation efforts. This certainly compels for prearranged and ex-ante instruments. At this juncture, let me emphasize that a single financial toolkit is not a panacea for DRF. We need to approach this from a risk layering perspective and see a promising instrument that syncs with a given level of risk. In relation to Fiji, we have expanded our disaster risk financing toolkit with the purchase of tropical cyclone and excess rainfall flood parametric insurance policies. I wish to acknowledge the PCRIC team for designing the policies based on the specifications requested by the Fijian government. On the same note, I wish to wholeheartedly thank the donor partners, especially the German government, for the €10 million funding specifically for premium support. A poignant point as I wish to reiterate is that given fiscal stress and PICs are grappling with a multi-year disaster risk financing support is essential. Technical understanding and knowledge of disaster risk financing products is quite limited in the Pacific. I note that several sophisticated risk-based products have been introduced in the market, including index insurance. Understanding the fundamentals and operational dynamics of the I'll carry on. Understanding the fundamentals and operational dynamics of the DRF products is essential in the public sector. I firmly believe that this regional workshop will provide a valuable platform for the technical leads of the PICs to learn the key tenets of the disaster risk instruments and how it fits the risk profile of a particular country.
That was Mr. Sakia Sinditoka, the Disaster Management Minister in Fiji.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
So Pacific Prepared, we're all about natural disasters, and obviously a big part of that is the weather, and we talk a lot about the weather, and the weather's mentioned in the Pacific a lot too. But I just want to know, Joe, how do you kind of go with weather forecasting? Like, do you sort of use terms like high pressure system or fronts or precipitation? Like, are these things that, you know, people are used to hearing?
Not at all in Fiji, but when we receive those kind of, you know, so-called unusual precipitation or unexpected precipitation, then we have a local term used by people like Fijians.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what's the term? Sorry.
Velaroi nanraki. Velaroi. There. Yeah. That's a term. That's a term we use in Fiji, and that's a common term. And then, like, it's not only like mentioning about the unusual or the unusual precipitation or unusual weather pattern. It's also stating that it's becoming irritating again. Eh? Yeah. Yeah. So like, sort of like we are like fed up with this weather or the temperature. And then,
so it sounds like, so the next story we're about to get into is basically the Samoa Weather Service are sort of almost doing what you're already doing in Fiji. They're sort
in
of
Samoa, in Samoa.
Samoa, yeah. So they're trying to replace some of the words, those sort of technical terms that they use in the weather, and they're trying to put in there like impact based explanations to what's going on with the forecast. So like, for example, if there's going to be like, you know, 100-kilometer winds, they won't say that. They'll say, look, your roof might blow off or your trampoline might blow away or whatever it might be. So they're trying to get, I guess, that sort of, this is what this weather will do or could do to your property or your house or something like that. So that's what they're trying to do in Samoa. And I imagine it would probably work well in other countries around the Pacific too.
My name is Lucero Tavale. I'm currently in charge of the meteorological office of Samoa. We call it the Samoa Meteorology Division. So I'm in charge of all the work of meteorology, geoscience, and ozone related work here in Samoa. When we talk about the meteorology terminology, you know, it's always science terminology is very difficult, and people are saying it's very technical. And we receive a lot of feedbacks from the public, people of Samoa. We work, now put a lot of efforts trying to address this issue. We're being involved with a lot of awareness programs, community-based awareness programs. So we've been out to the community, you know, the community level, trying to, you know, collect information as much as possible. A few years back, we decided to develop a Samoan glossary of terms, of meteorological terms. So there is a glossary of terms which is due to be reviewed. But that's one of the things that we try in just in order for us to address the issue of you know, understanding the terms of the meteorology language, the language that is being used by the meteorologists and the weather forecasters. We also now we are currently in the process of developing a development of what we call the impact-based forecasting with warning system. So that's one of the ideas, just trying to, you know, collect information from the end users, sectors, especially the sensitive sensors, sectors. Most vulnerable to the changes in the climate. So we are in the process of developing of our impact based without of us saying that what the weather will be. We tend to work towards that what the weather will do. Impact based. So okay. That's one of the ideas and one of the new outcomes of all the meetings and discussion collaborations, trying to find a way, trying to simplify the information. So instead of us saying that the wind will be 50 knots, for example, or 50 kilometers per hour, we will add this piece of information that trees will fall down, or things will start to, you know, lose from, you know, shelters, impact into shelters. And without saying that this amount of, for example, 100 millimeters of rainfall, instead of that, we can say that flooding is possible from this kind of rainfall, those kind of things. Yeah. So that people using this information will start to react to the impacts. Because some people, no matter how much we're trying to say 100 knots, 50, they will never understand what that can do. So it's rather relay the impacts, kind of the associated impacts. For example, waves will reach this area, coastal area, flooding in this area, those kind of things.
Tai Luteru, when you use terms like Vaitoelau and La'i in weather information, how do you simplify it, you know, for the people to understand and as well as the broadcasters?
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, it's part of the challenge of trying to understand the terminologies, yeah. You know that Samoa, each village or each district, they have their own local names for winds. But basically, how we see, you know, we name the winds according to the direction that is where it's blowing from. So what we try to do, you know, there's a different group age, you know, the elders, 70 years upwards, they don't understand northeast, southeast, the English names, the direction according to the compass. They understand it based on the traditional knowledge and, their belief, blowing from this time. So we are also incorporating the traditional knowledge as part of, when we put out information that, for example, winds for tomorrow is northeasterly winds of this strength, and then we bracket after that the traditional name of that wind direction. So that's how we the younger generation, they tend to understand the geographic locations easily. It's very hard for them to understand and learn the traditional names of winds. So we are trying to incorporate, not only the size but also the traditional knowledge from the outlaws into the, and that's part of the impact-based forecasting that I just mentioned.
When cyclones comes in different categories, how do you describe each category so that people may understand how serious these category may affect them?
For Samoa, it's a global standard classification. Samoa is part of the UN, the World Meteorological Organization. So the classification comes from a World Meteorological Organization standard classification. It's basically classified according to the wind strength. The new storm, the developing, that's category one, it's around 34 knots. And as we move up, the strongest is of category five. So that's how, classify according to the wind strength. And, the stronger the wind strength, that's the more impacts it gets. Can be caused.
That was Lutero Tuvale there from the Samoa Weather Service. And they're, talking about moving to that sort of more impact-based method of forecasting the weather in Samoa.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
That's the show for this week. Joe, thanks so much for your help again.
Been like a friend, you're most welcome. See you next week.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. Part of the aim of this program is to start conversations about natural disasters, climate change, and how traditional knowledge links them all together. My name is Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host, Josiah Nanunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.